Hey, everyone. Welcome to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali here with you on a Monday. Monday is when we're recording this, a podcast-only edition of Jay's Talk for your listening pleasure, which I guess actually now that I think about it means I should not say on the Sportsnet Radio Network because we're not on the network. It's only for you, the podcast listener. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening. Certainly all off-season, but we did have the off-season episode when we discussed the Andrés Giménez trade. We had a variety of guests on that, and we just, I guess on Friday, right after the news broke about Jeff Hoffman, we did have an excerpt, is what it was from, if you're curious where that audio came from, of myself and the great Roger Lajoie. Raj and I were on Sportsnet Tonight when the news broke live on the program, so it's always kind of fun when news breaks live on your shows, right? So that was our conversation with Shai, so thank you so much. The powers that be wanted me to give you another episode, given that we have not had a whole lot of Blue Jays news to discuss this offseason. I was on Sportsnet today during the day earlier this afternoon, and I got a chance to speak with Keegan Matheson of MLB.com. Keegan and I go way back, and Keegan always joins me, which is always great of him. Honestly, he's a really busy guy. So he joined me to discuss the Jeff Hoffman signing. You know, there are some reports about him failing not one but two physicals. So Keegan gives his expert analysis on what that means. And we also talk a little bit about Roki Sasaki, who apparently, according to a variety of reports, including Ken Rosenthal, we talk about Roki Sasaki and the potential that he could be a Toronto Blue Jay. So we wanted to get that conversation out to you. And as always, I wanted to read some text. You'll hear some text reading as well. 590-590, name and location. And honestly, I know this is a podcast, but if you do text that text line, I do check the text line, honestly, like more or less every single day, even if I'm not on the air. So if you want to reply, you want to just chat with me, you can always text at 590-590, and I will certainly take a look, take a scan, because I do genuinely check it every single day. But I have some news and notes here to get to you with you on our edition of Sportsnet Today, which we are giving to you here on Jay's Talk, and then our chat with Keegan Matheson of MLB.com. Enjoy. The Blue Jays finally make a move in free agency on Friday. They finally find someone to take their money. All-star reliever Jeff Hoffman signing for 3 years and $33 million. It's the largest contract ever handed out by Ross Atkins to a relief pitcher. Hoffman, of course, a Blue Jays draft pick, as I'm sure you all know, in 2014, and a prospect that was later traded in 2015 in that Jose Reyes-Troy Tulowitzki deal. So you guys let me know. This is my first chance to really hear from you since the signing on Friday night. What do you think of the deal? Text me at 590-590, name and location. It certainly doesn't solve the issues of power bats in the lineup, but the bullpen, it was a real problem, so it seems to be one issue checked off the shopping list. But what do you think? Let me know on the people's text line. And while you send me your texts, I thought this was interesting as well, all right? For those who had not seen it, this was sent out about 3 hours ago from Mark Bowman, who is a Braves beat writer for MLB.com. And also, speaking of MLB.com, in about 5 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Keegan Matheson, also of MLB.com. Keegan will join me. We'll chat some Blue Jays. I'm sure we'll talk about Hoffman, talk about Sasaki, talk about a whole variety of things for your guys in blue. But Mark Bowman, Braves beat writer for MLB.com, Keegan's colleague, he tweeted this out today, okay? This is a quote. Per source, Jeff Hoffman had a potential deal that was nixed when he failed a physical with the Braves medical staff. Hoffman also reportedly failed a physical with the Orioles before signing with the Blue Jays. So that latter bit about the Orioles, you guys probably already know this by now, was reported on Friday night by Robert Murray of FanSided. And I have to say, I don't know about you guys, I have to say, it does make me a little worried that he failed not one, but two physicals, and then the Jays signed him immediately. And it's funny because Hoffman played for the Phillies, so you are effectively trading him. I know this is not how it works, but because you're trading him for Jordan Romano, who signed with the Phillies after getting non-tendered, so you're essentially swapping these two relievers. Romano also had injury concerns, as we know, right, with his elbow. So you non-tender Romano, presumably because of injury concerns, and then you make an even larger monetary commitment to Hoffman, who also apparently has injury concerns. I won't lie to you guys, I'm a little worried about it. Now, again, pitchers who are relief pitchers or starters, regardless of their role, and I would go so far as to say most athletes, period, you get to being what, Hoffman's 32, you get to this age, you're going to have some wear and tear, and most pitchers have wear and tear on their elbows and arms and so on. So relief pitching, also generally speaking, is a little volatile year over year. You never really know who's going to be good or bad. Like, we think we know, but and generally speaking, they are. But, you know, I would say of all the positions in the sport, it's probably the most volatile one. So there's always that to consider. But, man, adding the injury concerns on top of the volatility that just naturally exists with relievers, it does have me a little bit worried. But you guys let me know at 590-590, name and location, and I will read your texts throughout the show. The other report percolating on the hot stove today is Scott Mitchell's report on Roki Sasaki, who apparently not only met with the Jays, but met with them in Toronto. And Scott was first on this. Shy and BNS are reporting it as well. And Ken Rosenthal is also reporting this. So there are certainly some legs to this. Apparently, Roki Sasaki not only met with the Jays, but met with them in the city of Toronto. It is a shame he had to meet with the Jays in what was the coldest week of the past several months. But whatever, I'm pretty sure it gets cold-ish in the part of Japan he is from, so maybe it won't deter him too much. Look, like with most things, I'd be shocked, truly stunned, if he does not sign with the Dodgers. Because really, like, why wouldn't he, right? If you're going to be making the same amount of money, no matter where you go, then why wouldn't you just sign with the best team? Like, if the money bid is the same everywhere, right? If that's the case, why wouldn't you just sign with the team that won the World Series and boasts multiple MVPs and multiple Hall of Famers? I would just be surprised, and I think most of you guys are on the same page. I would just be surprised if he signed anywhere other than the Dodgers at this point. But I do think it's a testament to this relationship Atkins had built with Sasaki that he even came here, right? Like, there are reports, and I've seen these reports as recently as like 20 minutes ago, but there are reports that the Giants, Mets, and Yankees, all from very reputable reporters, like Jack Curry was the one who reported this for the Yankees. I believe Ben Badler, who writes for Baseball America, he was one who reported this for the Mets. And Susan Slusser, who, of course, reports on the Giants for the San Francisco Chronicle. All three of them, very reputable, and all three of them reporting that the Giants, Mets, and Yankees have been told he is not signing there, that he is not coming there. I have not seen the same for the Blue Jays yet. So it seems the Jays next to the Dodgers and Padres, I mixed those two names together, Dodgers and Padres, are still in on him. So as much as I'd like to think that Sasaki is coming to the Blue Jays, you know, probably going to play on the West Coast. But again, I mean, there's reports that Ross Atkins has invested a lot of time over his time as GM of this team in the relationship with him overseas. So that probably speaks to that. But again, it just, you know, most teams are at an inherent disadvantage versus the Dodgers, even the Padres, really, right? So I thought that was really interesting. But again, text me 590-590, name and location, and we'll read your texts on the air. There's no name on this text, but it just says damaged goods, which I assume is in reference to Jeff Hoffman. And there's another name. There's another text here from Jay from London. And Jay, I appreciate hearing from you. Always do. Jay says, show Braves and Orioles passed on Hoffman due to physical. Sure doesn't make you feel good, does it? Nick from Scarborough says, with the injury concerns with Hoffman and Romano, I really would have rather seen the Jays take a flyer on the Canadian kid Romano at a much lesser cost. Also, get us a power bat. So first of all, yes, I think the injury concerns being there with both Hoffman and Romano, I mean, I sometimes subscribe, and maybe this is because I'm a little conservative when it comes to this stuff, but I sometimes subscribe to, you know, the devil you know versus the devil you don't. But like, Hoffman probably is a better pitcher than Jordan Romano. I hate to say it, but he probably is, generally speaking. But again, if the injury concerns are going to be there all season long, you committed a lot of money, like three years, $33 million. And the incentives could make that $39 million a little bit dicey. Nick also says, also get us a power bat. I mean, there were some reports as well that apparently Anthony Santander is considering taking a shorter term deal. So, I mean, does that bode well for the Blue Jays after they had allegedly being the operative word here, offered Anthony Santander 4 years, $82 million, and then further reports saying they were upping the total dollars, if not the total years. So I'm not sure. Maybe that means they're looking to cash in the short term and trying again next year. But I mean, there's still a lot of question marks over this Blue Jays offseason. To help us dissect what has gone on so far, certainly to talk the Jeff Hoffman news and to talk about what we've heard from Roki Sasaki's camp, is Keegan Matheson from MLB.com. Keegan, how are you today?
Joe, I'm doing well, man. How are you?
You are sounding surprisingly chipper considering what happened with the Packers yesterday.
Yeah, I think I set myself up for it well, you know? And I think the game was such a disaster that I can't even be upset. Like, this is not Brett Favre throwing a pick in the NFC Championship type thing. I don't think I went to school the next day. This was just a mess from the very beginning. They looked young. They looked very, very young and at times dumb. So it was an ugly game. Man, oh, man, I thought they could do something at the end, but maybe next year Jordan Love will do something other than throw 8-yard out routes, and I'll have a bit more fun watching football. But we'll see, man. It's a heck of a thing. Those are the Green Bay Packers are the one team I still allow myself to be a true fan of.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to stay connected with some sort of fandom. But, man, it reminds me that, 29 years out of 30 on average, you just end up really miserable. Why do folks do this? I don't know.
You know, it's funny. I remember when we went to school, we were always told you get one team you can be a fan of. And so I guess your team are the Packers. I'm not sure if I've quite decided what team that is for me, but generally speaking, I find it a lot easier to cheer for the NFL versus cheering for Toronto sports in a general sense, given what happens in this city more often than not. But you talk about fandom, and a lot of fans are very excited, Keegan, about the offseason for the Blue Jays, and then not a lot has happened, as we've discussed before. Well, we did get someone actually willing to take the Blue Jays' money, Jeff Hoffman, and as I was discussing before I brought you on, the news of the day really isn't this happened on Friday, so we've had the whole weekend to kind of percolate and discuss and let the Hoffman news simmer, but the news of today really isn't, okay, well, what's next for the Blue Jays? It's, hey, Hoffman apparently failed not one, but two physicals, one with the Orioles and one with the Braves, which I gotta say, like, someone texted on the text line, there was no name, but someone texted to say Hoffman is damaged goods. Now, I'm not willing to go quite as far as that, but I will say it does, for me, put a bit of a damper on the signing when you know that not one but two pretty good teams as far as talent evaluating go, they passed on Hoffman and the Blue Jays spent a lot of money to sign him instead.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel any better about the situation. Now, physicals are an interesting thing. They're more about getting a feel for how risky something is. And I think a lot of folks, when they hear failed physical, they're thinking, oh my God, he has a blown shoulder and the Blue Jays didn't look at his shoulder. That's not quite what it is. It's taking the temperature of the risk of how much life do we think is on this elbow? How much tread is left on the tire of this guy's shoulder? Does he have an old injury that you want to take a look at to make sure it won't lead to a future injury? And every team is going to have a different comfort level. Now, whether they need to be 90 or 95 or 99% comfortable with it to green light that physical, that's going to change based on the team. The Orioles, I think, if I'm stretching the word encouraging, stretching that definition, one encouraging thing there was that they did continue to talk with him. And you do often see that. A team will say, listen, we're getting a little nervous about this elbow, about the shoulder, about your wrist, but let's come back at a different number type of deal. Now, the Blue Jays obviously were comfortable with it, and it clearly moved the number a little bit. But this isn't what you want to be hearing, of course. I won't deny that whatsoever. Not what you want to be hearing after a signing. But as long as Hoffman can stay healthy, though, my goodness, a fantastic reliever. Like one of the better relievers in Major League Baseball the last couple of seasons. An incredible turn from how his career started back here a decade ago. But, ideally for the Blue Jays, this is the last time I'm saying, the body parts in relation to Jeff Hoffman. But it's an interesting news cycle. You don't often see it's coming out that one, let alone two, have failed him.
And again, I don't want to characterize the Blue Jays necessarily as desperate, but because so many people had passed on taking their money, I found it interesting, right, Keegan? Because I guess the Braves and Orioles and Blue Jays, these three teams are at different stages of their competitive cycles, so to speak. And I guess to that end, the Braves and Orioles can afford in a certain way to be a little more cautious or, again, maybe be a little bit more risk averse, I suppose, in the Blue Jays based on where they are in the team having guys under contract and the team's going forward with having other guys under contract vis-a-vis their stars and so on. Like, the Orioles have basically all their young guys under contract. Their thing that they're going to have to deal with is signing all their young players to extensions, right? I think the Braves and Alex Anthopoulos, they're going to have to deal with extending this World Series window in a division that is extremely competitive, whereas the Blue Jays, it feels like if it's not this year, I mean, I'm not sure when it is going to be, right? So I think that's, for me at least, the way I view it is, not that the Blue Jays didn't have a choice, but if other teams passed on them, they probably can't afford to be quite as risk averse.
That's right. They needed to find this high-end reliever somewhere. Yeah. And Jeff Hoffman was one of the very best available, trade and free agency combined. And there's going to be an element of risk in every signing. I mean, if you go out and sign a 34-year-old starting pitcher, how many tens of thousands of pitches have they thrown? How many thousands of sliders have strained those elbow ligaments and tendons? That elbow is going to look a lot different than mine or yours on an MRI scan, assuming that we have not been ripping sliders in our off time.
I have not been.
There's always, not quite, you know? There's always going to be that wear and tear. And the bar for that, of course, changes as a player gets older, what a medical team would deem to be okay. You're never going to find a guy you can look at and say, hey, perfect elbow, perfect shoulder, everything's great, he will not get hurt. That can change in one pitch at any time for any player. So it's not about a failed physical or a physical a team is not comfortable with. It's not a disaster. It's not as bad as it sounds necessarily. Still not something you love to hear whatsoever. But it's about how much risk you're willing to take on for the right number. And if nothing at all had shown in those physicals, and Jeff Hoffman was the most healthy-looking pitcher of all time, maybe we're talking about a different number as well. It's just, it's part of it. It feels a bit heartless to talk about the human body and health in relation to the price tag on this, but it is baked into those formulas the teams look at, and the Jays clearly found a level they were comfortable with the risk involved.
Chatting with Keegan Mathison from MLB.com here on Sportsnet Today. Show Ali here with you until the top of the hour. You know, Keegan, on Friday, I was chatting with Shai on right when this news broke on Sportsnet Tonight. And it was interesting because I guess a lot of the conversation, and this was mostly speculation from everyone, like mostly fans, about Hoffman's role on the team, right? Now, like you said, elite reliever. I think he was ranked as like the number two reliever available in free agency this year, which is pretty cool that the Blue Jays got a guy like that. Again, to your point, if he stays healthy. But I mean, I think after you saw Clay Holmes sign to not be a reliever, and after you saw the success of players like Ronaldo Lopez last year, also for the Braves, and other players like a Jordan Hicks, who obviously played for the Blue Jays before, and then with the Giants tried to become a starter again, do you think that's in the cards for Hoffman at all? Do you think that's at all a part of this conversation? Or do you think that given where the bullpen was last year, that this is a signing for him to strictly be the team's closer or something close to it?
I think this leans pretty heavily towards just being the closer. And I thought it was interesting, and I was glad the Blue Jays did put this in their initial release, Ross Atkins saying he's out of the bullpen and he'll have a chance to close games. Kind of, you know, answering the question before I had to bug anybody to ask it, I guess, which is great. And Hoffman coming into the bullpen right now, I think, makes a ton of sense to me. If a year or two down the road you want to crack that door open for whatever reason, sure. And that's why some of those incentives are in there. Not necessarily for him to chase, but if he does convert or does stretch out to multiple innings or anything like that, there's at least some compensation waiting for him to make that change. Right now, though, I just view him as a closer, a damn good one, and someone who I think immediately elevates this bullpen significantly, because now Chad Green, Jimmy Garcia is back in that role he's thrived in for 2 years. Eric Swanson, who I think is a really important piece of this bullpen who's not getting talked about enough, is now in a much better role. Maybe he's pitching the sixth, the seventh inning sometimes. Everything else makes more sense. I did not like the idea of closer by committee whatsoever. But I think this makes it much clearer. It makes Pete Walker's life easier, John Schneider's life easier. And if their lives are easy, that typically means that games are going a little better. I think this leaves them in just such a better place.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on that. For a bullpen that, you know, by most metrics, gave up, in a general sense, by war, gave up approximately 6 to 7 wins over the course of last season. I've said to you before, Keegan, that if the team's bullpen was merely bad, not historically bad, but merely regularly bad, they might have been closer to making the playoffs, which is just a crazy thing to say out loud. But if the last four guys in any order to touch the baseball are, like you mentioned, Chad Green, Jimmy Garcia, Eric Swanson, and now Jeff Hoffman, you're in a much enough, obviously they all have to stay healthy, but that's the case for all bullpens. But if they do, then you are absolutely in a much better place. So I'm with you on that. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other news of the last 48 hours. Scott Mitchell was the first on this, and since then, Shai Davidi, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and certainly Ken Rosenthal have reported this as well, Keegan, that Roky Sasaki not only has met with the Blue Jays in his quest to join Major League Baseball from NPB, but that he met with the Blue Jays in Toronto. Now, kind of a shame that he met with the Blue Jays in Toronto in what I think was like the coldest week of the last like 6 months or whatever it was. But I got to say, what do you think? If this is to be believed, do you think there's some real teeth to this idea that Sasaki could be a Blue Jay?
I think the timing of this is meaningful because Sasaki and his agency with his agent Joel Wolf, they had met with some teams initially. This is going back to late 2024, that final week, I believe. And when his agent spoke with media, I believe on December 30th, he had said that they were going to go back to Japan, that Sasaki would, sorry, and then that if there were reason, he could probably meet with another team or two, make a couple of visits. And visiting Toronto, choosing to do that is not just for fun. It was not a fun week to be here, probably. It's not a leisure trip. If he is making that trip at that stage of the game, there is meaning to that timing. And the Blue Jays line up in such an interesting spot here because this is not about money. He's going to sign for a bonus of a few million bucks. The number is not going to matter at all in this. The number is what has gotten the Blue Jays in on Ohtani, in on Soto. Even though they haven't been the most attractive destination, think more Soto, the Blue Jays were able to elbow their way in with a ton of cash, which Blue Jays ownership has or can make available for the right guy, I guess. Now, in this situation, they have to sell the team and ideally sell their ability to develop pitchers. I think the Blue Jays' ability to develop pitching has kind of been miscast in a lot of these conversations, maybe more nationally in the U.S. And Roky Sasaki is not a kid. You know, he's not 18 years old trying to figure out how to throw a changeup for the first time. This is not about minor league development. So I don't point to Ricky Tiedemann and Nate Pearson. That's not what matters here for me. This is something closer to Yusei Kikuchi, Robbie Ray, guys like Berríos, Gausman, and Bassett. They've been a little more about maintaining success. But the Blue Jays, thinking major league level, Pete Walker, the Blue Jays training staff, who's a big part of this, they've done a really good job of acquiring veteran pitchers, improving some of them, or at least keeping them good in the right cases. That's more the direction that I point to. And the Blue Jays have done a lot of things wrong, but if there's one thing they've done right, it's that. It's exactly that. And that's why I think the Blue Jays, when we talk about pitching development, I don't care where their farm system is ranked so much when we're talking about Roky Sasaki. This is a little different for me, and I do think that they can point to that as a strength instead of something that they need to make up. Now, beyond that, you're dealing with the player's personal comfort, a young man who is not just changing leagues, but changing countries and continents, and the culture where he wants to live is important in all of this for his age, so young. But I think the Blue Jays do have things that they can point to in a negotiation where how much is a 74 and 88 win season going to matter? I'm not sure. He's such a unique case. But if this is about developing a pitcher at the big league level, the Jays have shown they're much better at doing that than they are at developing young kids, which Sasaki is not.
You and I have spoken before, Keegan, about the idea that sometimes in sports, and this is not just the baseball thing, right? You and I obviously talk about mostly about baseball, but just in all sports, especially in North America, I think we've had the conversation many times about how players might not want to play in Toronto because of their perception of the city. And I've often thought, and when it comes to baseball specifically, and I think you're starting to see this in the world of basketball where there are a lot more international players, but I think in a lot of these cases, for non-American players, I wonder how much that actually matters. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you're from America, you might have a certain perception of Canada. You might have a certain perception of Toronto if you've watched the Raptors or the Blue Jays over many years. But if you're like from Japan, or you're from the Dominican, or you're just not from North America and you're choosing, then I don't really see why Toronto would be all that different. If you're not familiar with any of these cities, is my point, why Toronto would be that different from, you know, New York or Milwaukee or LA or any of these other cities that players can play in.
It's a lazy narrative. It typically always has been, but especially, like you say, Sho, when you're speaking about a player who is from Latin America or coming from Asia, I think especially. Now, if you're an American player and you grew up in Texas or California, Florida, Alabama, wherever it is, you might have some of those ties. That's a little more when we get into East Coast, West Coast, right, having spring training in Arizona, stuff like that. Now, of course, it's going to be a factor sometimes, especially when the Blue Jays are struggling or when they're not spending money. Right now, they're spending money. They've got to win more baseball games, but maybe the border becomes a bit of a factor for certain players. But if you are Roky Sasaki, or I say the same for many free agents, I think that this conversation gets overblown quite frequently by American media, which is to a 1% extent understandable, I guess. But as a Major League Baseball player for the Toronto Blue Jays, how much of your year are you spending in Toronto? 3 months. You can get by with 100 days in Canada. You are probably going to live in one of the many glass skyscraper condo buildings within eyesight of the stadium, like a lot of players do. It's quick in and out. It's a fine place to live. It's a good place to be young and rich, I'm sure. It's not as big a factor, I think, as it is often made out to be. Now, the Canadian market is unique, but especially if you are coming from Cuba, the Dominican, Venezuela, Korea, Japan, it has to be viewed a little more equally to going to the United States. Now, of course, there's going to be the draws of going to New York, going to LA, going to these very large cities. But Toronto is not a small town, and Toronto is spending a lot of money. So it's something that the Blue Jays, from a front office level show, we continue to hear the Blue Jays say it's an advantage. It's something we try to sell. And for the right guy, it might be. We'll see. But I don't think it would be something that's prohibitive whatsoever. And even last week, yeah, it was a pretty crappy week to be in Toronto. It was wet and snowy and cold and gross, but it was snowing in Japan too. You know, he's not coming from the beach every single day. I think it wouldn't be too shocking, hopefully. And I'm sure they put him up at a hotel room a little nicer than where you or I would stay in Toronto here.
I would hope so. I would certainly hope so. That's for sure. Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think that where he comes in Japan, I know Japan, much like Canada, has a variety of climates, but from where he is from, I believe it's not that different from the climate in Toronto, which honestly, as far as climates in Canada go, is pretty mild, all things considered, right?
Okay.
Like, yeah, we're not talking about him living in, like, you know, like the middle of the prairies, for example, right? He gets to live in Toronto in the Golden Horseshoe. And again, the rumors are that the Dodgers, Padres, Rangers, Yankees, Cubs, Mariners, and Mets are all a variety of teams that are pursuing him. And there were news today, even, Keegan, from some of your colleagues in the baseball media that the Giants, Mets, and Yankees have all been told he's not signing there yet as well. So I have not seen that come out for the Blue Jays, at least since we've started this conversation. So it certainly seems like the Jays are right next to the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres in terms of signing the 23-year-old Roky Sasaki. The international signing period does open starting Wednesday, which is when he can sign, but I think he's expected to sign by January 23rd, which I believe is the deadline. Before I let you go, Keegan, I wanted to get to this with you, and I appreciate you as always being generous with your time for me. Always fun when we get to catch up. This was also from Ken Rosenthal's piece in The Athletic about Roki Sasaki, and it says here, the team memorably pursued Shohei Ohtani last offseason, hosting him during the winter meetings at their spring training complex in Dunedin. Ohtani left the complex with bags of Jays gear and wearing a Jays cap and with his dog, DeCopin, outfitted in a Canada jacket. I gotta say, like, I know this is not really news, but I gotta say, that's the first time I think I've actually heard that Ohtani, like, he met with the Blue Jays in Dunedin and did all these things in terms of leaving with gear like that. I think that's the first report I actually saw from a national reporter that confirmed Ohtani did what he did when it comes to the Blue Jays, which I know is kind of dredging up things in the past and Blue Jays fans would rather forget, but I just thought that was hilariously kind of just put in to Rosenthal's piece when it comes to the Sasaki news.
And I've got a fun story for you, Sho, that while I was working on my book, which comes out in a few months, there were a few stories I had to commit myself to keeping just for the book, and that's one of them.
Okay.
And it's and I expected it to be out well before now, but it must have been 8-9 months a year ago where I had written it and tucked it away. The full story, and that story of his dog running out wearing a Canadian jacket.
That's so good.
Shohei Ohtani with a Blue Jays hat on his head. And I remember the origin of wanting to chase that story for me. I remember it was before Shohei Ohtani came back to Toronto the first time. And John Schneider made this comment. He saw the right things, handled it well. And he said, you know, if anything, just tell him to give us back that Blue Jays hat. And that stuck in my mind for months. And I said, what the hell did that mean? there's a whole lot more to it. Okay. Let me really, really shill the book well, far too much in advance and really annoy people. I'm not sure if by that point, if people will enjoy the story or not, but, that is true. The dog was there and, man, that only adds to the heartbreak. It's quite the scene, but, you know, Shohei certainly was there at the complex going through with, Atkins, with Shapiro. John Schneider was there as well. Of course, they completely emptied out the complex that day. No players. Some of the big leaguers knew what was going on. Some of the minor leaguers were told there was an important ownership meeting, quote unquote. But okay. I think wink, wink, everybody knew what was going on. And man, oh man, that would have been the day show that we spoke to Ross Atkins on Zoom
right.
in the mysterious white room.
That's
will never forget it.
Gosh, that feels honestly like it was a million years ago at this point.
Oh my God, a lifetime ago.
Yeah, I can't.
It feels like it didn't happen. It was the strangest thing I'll ever cover.
Yeah, I'll never forget being here in the Sportsnet newsroom. And literally huddling around with like Will Liu and Ailish Forfar. And I'll give Blair credit. He started to do it. Then he's like, I'm not going to be a part of this. And he walked away. But we're all huddling around the TV, watching the plane taxi down the runway. And I kind of thought to myself, like, what are we doing? Like, I don't think I've ever been a part. This reminded me of like when the helicopters were being sent to Yorkville to follow Kawhi around when we thought he might resign,
yep.
Right? Oh, man. It's just, that's the kind of stuff that goes on in this city sometimes.
It was an unreasonable thing. And I remember it vividly because it was my girlfriend's birthday that day. And my job is stupid enough to explain on most days.
Right.
Here I am hunched over my laptop watching videos of airplanes. I'm trying to make phone calls. Nobody's answering me, of course, so I'm getting angry. I remember at one point that evening I just had to send her along because we were meeting some friends down at a local restaurant, I'll call it. And I said, just take my credit card and go. I don't know when this guy's going to sign. And so there was a lot of money on the line that night, Show, let me tell you.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, not just $700 million, a little bit more for Keegan Mathison, that's for sure. Well, look, man, I appreciate you doing this. Always fun when we get to catch up. I'm hoping that by the next time we chat, it's not only about the bullpen, it's not only about Roki Sasaki, but maybe about some power bats. So we'll see what happens with maybe Anthony Santander, Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman. Lots still to come before spring training gets underway, but you'll, of course, be covering it for MLB.com. Thank you again for doing this, man, and we'll chat soon, I'm sure.
You got it, my friend. We'll talk next time.
There he goes. Keegan Mathison from MLB.com. Wanted to read some text here before we take a quick break. Doug from Burlington, 590-590, name and location. And again, you can text me about anything, whether it's the Roki Sasaki potential signing, whether it's Jeff Hoffman, you can certainly text me 590-590 anytime. Doug from Burlington, Hoffman is high risk and high reward. I'm still not sold on the Blue Jays management. I feel this move is more about self-preservation that runs the risk of blowing up in their faces. This management team reminds me of the Maple Leafs management in the 80s. I've seen you actually, you know, this reminds me, I've seen you make this comparison before to like the Harold Ballard Leafs, Doug, which I feel like, I don't know if I'd go quite that far, because if only because that was one of, I think that's not even one of, that's the worst ownership group, management group I think you'll ever see in this the history of any team for this city. But we're not that far away if they lose Vladdy and Bo. But having said that, they needed someone to take their money. It does smack a teensy bit, as we talked about off the top, not of desperation necessarily, but of a team that knows they cannot afford at this point to wait on every single free agent. They cannot afford to wait for every single situation to be as perfect as humanly possible, right? So I do appreciate the text. There was a text here from, oh, here it is, Louie in Toronto. My neighbor's name is Louie, actually, so I don't know if this is Louie in Scarborough, but this is Louie in Toronto, so maybe not. Either way, Louie, thank you for texting. He says, the trade does not make sense, as you say, because of the injury. We didn't show Romano any loyalty at all when we traded him away, or I guess non-tendered him. He got a set of a lot of tough spots, and I'm sure he'll come back healthy. I'll put it this way. I certainly hope he does. I hope Romano comes back and lights the world on fire. Not because I wanted him to stick it to the Blue Jays. I've always really liked Romano. He's Canadian, right? The Markomaniac, as we like to lovingly call him. And I do hope he does succeed. But yeah, it does. It, like I said off the top, it does strike me somewhat bizarre that you'd look away from a guy with injury concerns and sign a guy with injury concerns. But I suppose where the Blue Jays are at this point, the beggars can't be choosers necessarily. Thanks again to Keegan. He's my pal, my friend. So we go way back. Always fun when I get to really chat with him about anything. You heard us chat about the Packers for a little bit there, but it is fun when we get to talk about the Blue Jays, and he's always super generous with his time for us. But I'm sure we'll do this again. Honestly, if it's not me, it'll be Blake. Blake Murphy, of course. I was going to say in over his head. Blake is literally never in over his head with anything, but Blake is quite busy. He has his hands full, is a better way of saying it, with the Raptors show right now. By the way, if you haven't given the Raptors show a listen, maybe you're not a Raptors fan, so if that's the case, then I don't blame you. If you are a Raptors fan, I also understand it's a tough watch these days, but I definitely recommend giving the Raptors show with Matt Bonner a listen. It's kind of fun getting the opinions of Blake and the opinions of a former NBA star like Matt, so I definitely recommend it. But when he is not super busy doing stuff for Sportsnet Central, Sportsnet.ca, or the Sportsnet Radio Network, Blake will do some, I don't know if we'll call it Jays Talk Plus, but he will, I'm sure, do some kind of off-season review at some point. And he might even do the next one of these off-season episodes. But Blake is the man, so I'm sure you'll hear his voice as soon as possible. If not, you'll hear the voices of Blair and Barker. Blair and Barker, by the way, just recorded earlier today. Again, Monday is when I'm recording this. They recorded an episode about the Jeff Hoffman signing, about the rumors percolating around Roky Sasaki, and they also spoke to Jim Bowden from MLB Network Radio, and they also spoke to Jim about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and that contract situation. So I highly recommend giving it a listen, but whether it is Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker, Blake Murphy, or myself, we will continue to do a variety of these Jays Talk offseason episodes. But until then, fingers crossed we get some more signings. Fingers crossed we have a power bat to talk about, a thumper, as Barker likes to say. But until then, thanks so much for listening to Jays Talk. I'm Shoali. We'll be back later on the Sportsnet Radio Network.